Hello, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to Life Autistic. This is episode number 618. And this episode is all about retribution. It seems to have become a real important thing. For some strange reason, we have decided to take it on to ourselves. And I don't think this is new. I don't think this is something that's just happened in the last generation or two. But manliness is often tied to someone's ability to get and hold on to retribution. You know, I think it comes from the fact that men have to be so strong, you know. I mean, physically strong. I don't mean like, you know, strong-willed or strong principled. That's a part of manliness too, but it doesn't seem to be, that stuff is starting to kind of go by the wayside, where we have latched on to the whole idea of retribution as being probably the preeminent virtue. A great man is one who can, you know, you're hoping he can fight for right, but you still have a great amount of respect for even evil, who can get its will done, you know, and that's what usually comes to it. It's from the threat of retribution if the things they want don't happen. Now, you know, when it's good, it's always retribution in answer to some perceived injustice, whether there really was an injustice there or not. On September 11th, 2001, two planes were crashed into World Trade Center towers, and one crashed into the Pentagon, and a fourth one, the only other one that we're aware of, went down, I think, in Pennsylvania or something, apparently on a trajectory course for Washington, D.C., to cause some kind of havoc there, to run into something. Who knows? I'm sure somebody does. I will not say that I am well informed about any of these things. In fact, I have gone to the websites where there are people who talk about the very compelling, at least to me, evidence that at least some part of this stuff was staged by who knows who, but with very different reasons for why they were doing things. I'm not willing to go to the point to where I think it was some kind of a government conspiracy. Although, the covering up that happened afterwards was indicative. It was interesting and very telling. You know, that these things were, you know, that the government was at least complicit in it, or that it was, well, and that's not really what I'm about when I'm talking about retribution, is about that. Anyway, the purpose for bringing up September 11th is that we made a faithful choice. Now, in the heat of passion, it's very easy to make very heated decisions that in retrospect probably weren't the right responses. Jay's always going to be controversial, you know, and I know that for a lot of people 9/11 is sacred. It's become a holy day to honor the deaths of people. You know, as if they were great patriots. You know, I find it interesting all of the imagery that gets painted around 9/11. It's almost as if, you know, everybody in those office towers knew that they were going to die, but to support the American way, to, you know, to thumb their noses at international terrorism, they went to work and sacrificed their lives, and weren't the policemen and fire crews amazing? And that's true. They were doing their job, and they did a heroic job of doing their job. And I don't mean to downplay that at all. But it's really interesting on a couple of levels that I want to talk about. Those who perpetrated these heinous acts died in the midst of doing them. These were. You can give them several names: kamikazes, you know, suicide bombers, which I think is interesting, since the planes actually became the bombs. But those who actually perpetrated the evil were received the equivalent of the worst punishment we can give, honestly. You know, they died. The worst punishment we've ever cooked up is that we kill people, you know. We still navel stare and have heated debates about capital punishment. September 11th was used as a wonderful political tool to accomplish, in the last 6.5, nearly 7 years, to change the United States, to turn it into something that I don't think is particularly good. I don't think it particularly works toward our betterment. I'm so hot. Oh, I gotta turn on my cool air. It's one of those days when it's a little cool in the morning and it's hot in the afternoons, and you really don't know how to adjust things as you go along. So, adjusting things. People's fears were capitalized on, let's be honest. Government did a fine job of using that fear to do all kinds of interesting things. You know, those in power can twist it in several ways to answer all kinds of political agendas that wouldn't normally have ever gotten done. The power of the presidency is expanded amazingly. At the drop of a hat, martial law can be declared, and you might as well send Congress home, because they are purposeless. We essentially have a dictator. Not at this point. that power is not being used right now. But it has been codified in law. It is in place. And at some point, somebody, for whatever reason, I can't think that it would be for a particularly good one, that person could just take over. And that would be it. As long as the state of martial law was declared, it could be done. And we have the perfect way to do it in perpetuity. Terrorism. We will never win against terrorism because evil will always be there. The only time evil will not be there is when all evil people are dead. When they're just not here. And, we have chosen, and I think it's actually a good thing. We have chosen not to spend our time, effort, money, all the things we have in trying to destroy evil. Because it's not going to happen. Because we're already seeing that in the attempt to try to destroy evil, our lives are diminished trying to do it. For some wonderful, beautiful day when evil is gone through our own power, which will never happen, we can't do it. We can't do it. For several reasons that's not important to get into. After 9/11 happened, we launched the quote-unquote war on terror. Its original purpose was to gain vengeance for that incident. It's often called an attack. I think it's difficult to call it an attack from the simple reason that there was no opposing army. I don't know how a handful of people, I guess it's up to 20, how a relative handful of people can constitute an attack on something. Sadly, given the circumstances of our world, and I will absolutely say something that, although it's very unpolitically correct to say, that the attitude of our leaders, the way our government goes out voyeuristically into other countries as if we rule the world, we have bases everywhere in the world, and we are very threatening, even if we don't intend to be. And the people, you guys can do whatever you want, we don't care. It's still very intimidating to a small country to have the United States military around, close by. To use a term, it has a chilling effect on everybody, and it tends to stir up animosity and anger. If you were a college student and your parents stationed some agent nearby to keep an eye on you, or to, just make sure that they have their presence felt so that they know that things in your area are basically going the way they want them to, wouldn't that college student be a little retaliatory? Not to justify what was done, the horrible thing that was done, the people that were killed, but to say that our leaders, our basic attitude, and I use that term "our" loosely, I don't include myself in that group, you may not either. And I'm very willing to, you know, not to task Americans with it. I'm very willing to task those in leadership positions in America for not having been better leaders, for not being, for not having foreseen this. That's what leaders are supposed to do. That's why we give them so much power. They get a lot of money, a lot of prestige. They are given many perks. But in exchange for those things that they get, we expect them to comport the name America, the concept of America, well. And I think we have been just completely let down by this. Our leaders have not done that. They have chosen a course of, let's threaten the entire world because that'll make us feel better. And what it did was, it's like the school bully, you know, who's always kind of making his might and influence felt everywhere he goes. One could say it's because of a sense of fear. You know, the psychologist can play many fun games with why bullies are the way they are. But the fact that smaller people, the quote-unquote victims, whether they really are victims or not, and they start chewing away a bit at that bully, and I think that's really what 9/11 was. It was flashy. I'll grant them it was flashy. It was very, you know, polarizing. Anybody who thought that the world was a wonderful, beautiful place, and we had nothing to worry about. We could just proceed as we always had and wanted to, and nobody was going to, you know, nobody was going to get weird about anything. We can't do that anymore. That's for certain. You know, we are, I hope you remember, I'm still not going off of notes, I'm just going off the top of my head. Incidentally, if you want me to speak to you, the phone number is 1-575-461-2716. And if you're getting tired of hearing that phone number, you know, I will certainly stop once I, you know, have a good flow of income. Now that's not a threat. That's just the way it's going to be. One of the purposes of this podcast is to make these speeches, me coming and speaking to a group, to groups, happen. If it happens and things are going well and I've got some momentum going, I won't have to give the phone number out so often. Don't want to be rude. We need to understand that of how we're perceived to be. Whether we think we're that way or not, that's not terribly important. Perceptions drove what happened on 9/11. You can say, oh, we didn't deserve that. But other people apparently thought we did. And it's not very hard to step back a little from the situation and say, you know what? America gives every impression. The United States government, whatever kind of instrumentality you want to call it, looks like a bully. Trying to, you know, I guess it's all about national interest abroad. That has been That has been touted as the most important thing. In many junctures, that often gets used as the reason why we will bomb a foreign country that really has done very little to us. Like I was saying, the 9/11 attack, although flashy, was minuscule. It was a mosquito bite, really. I mean, a very graphic one. You know, we might have swelled up a bit, stuff like that. But that was our reaction to it. The actual thing that was done was perpetrated by 20 people. If 20 people can do this to a country, wow. Is that a real significant stock in the eye to a bully? Now, of course, what we've chosen to do is to do retribution. The retribution that we have done is so amazingly out of proportion to what was done to us. It's amazing. Many thousands, probably tens of thousands more people have died by our hands than ever died at the hands of the wicked men who did 9/11. And I don't mean wicked to be facetious. They were wicked. But when there's a bully in your midst, do you go and have conferences with the bully? Do you go and nicely go up and say, please, 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 let us live our own lives, and please don't stomp all over our little garden that we have planned the way we want to? Please, United States, please don't make us be like you. And I think it's really funny because it really is. We, long before 9/11, we would bomb things that were the least bit threatening at all to us or to our interests, really. There was never really a direct threat to the United States. It was mostly, you know, there were American companies, corporations. You can chalk this up to the power of corporatism in the United States. You know, these were... We would go in and we would bomb, you know, this or that out of a sense of the fact that we needed to protect oil, or we needed to, you know, somebody was threatening on pulling McDonald's out of a country, and we would go and we would threaten them. And then, of course, they would pull back because, I'm sorry, we have a big stick. We're a big, mean-looking, nasty kid on the block that you usually just want to appease so you don't have to get beat up. We've invaded whole countries and occupied them for years. Consider for a moment Korea. Was Korea threatening the United States? No. You know, we can always pump up the whole thing of, we're trying to stop the spread of communism. And you go, we ensnared an entire country in doing that. South Korea has been our slave state for many years, over 50 years probably now. It's getting close to it. You know, we have a government in South Korea that we like. If for some reason they decide to start separating themselves from us, start to turn from us, we would start applying pressure because it's a power base for us and we enjoy doing that. We look like a bully because we act like a bully. And when other people try to goose us, when you go to the movies and you see a bully, you immediately don't like them, right? You root for the underdog. And you love it when that underdog pulls down that bully's pants. You love it when that little insignificant kid finally gets some courage and pops that bully in the eye. And you cheer, yay! You got him back! Yay for justice! And yet, when you are the bully, when you are the big striding monstrosity, the big colossus, and you stride the earth, and you squish out things that get in the way of you doing exactly what you want, which is what the American government often does. It's an incredible need to have their thumb on everybody. We, you know, we get upset when the underdog, when the person who is feeling the oppression of the bully decides to take a pop at him. That's exactly what happened on 9/11. Now, all those wonderful Hollywood stories where you pop that bully and he has a bloody nose and he goes, and he runs home to his mommy, because all the psychologists tell you that that's what bullies are. They're just big babies that push their weight around because they're basically insecure. I'm not really big on that theory, for the simple reason that that's not the way we reacted. We didn't go running home to mama. We decided that we were going to start just taking swings at everybody. Now, honestly, I think most of the moves that we have made in the last 7 years have been for political reasons. It has been payback for... thinly veiled, barely justified payback for people who have chosen to turn on us. Saddam Hussein used to be one of our stooges. Iran was a hated, well, there's so much history behind all that, and I don't purport to be a historian at all, except to say that we used to control Iran through the Shah of Iran. He was our puppet leader. Well, that's probably a stretch. He was a leader that we backed and that we supported, even against his own people. His own people didn't like him. We, and not just the United States, the West too, Britain was very helpful, we put in the Shah. And when things fell apart in the late 70s and early 80s in Iran, and they became, you know, the revolutionary Islamic state of whatever, we got angry. How dare those Iranian dogs get in the way of our nation building, of our creating the kind of conditions we wanted in the Middle East. No, and if you say, we've never controlled the Middle East, we used to control the Middle East very handily. Then they started rising up. The little skinny kids got together and started rising up against the big bullies of the West. You know, when Osama bin Laden, for instance, talks about what he hates, it's not just America, it's the entire West. He's trying to get us back for our oppression of all that. Now, I'm not going to try to paint him as a wonderful person. He's doing it for political reasons, too. You know, he is the George Washington of the Middle East. Although, maybe not we've painted George Washington as a very fantastic, wonderful, magnificent man. And he might have been. So I guess using that appellation wouldn't be right. He could be painted as a freedom fighter to his own people. Now, we don't want him painted that way, and if we hear that he's being painted that way, we'll throw you in Guantanamo Bay, and you'll never see your family again. And that's also very indicative of the fact that we're a retribution nation now. Now, and that didn't start recently. That's old news. That's old news. We've been getting there for a long, long time. This is not new. This is not fresh. This is just that now it's just become so incredibly obvious. You know, although we lie to ourselves as a nation all the time. Every time Michael Medved says, "We're the greatest nation on God's green earth," I cringe. I cringe at the statement. Because it's just that kind of haughtiness, that kind of boastfulness that helped us get into the mess that we are currently in. We do need to be big to defend ourselves. But that bigness didn't stop there. It didn't stop at defending ourselves. We have been obnoxious. We haven't really attacked anybody in a warlike way until Iraq. We've always been trying to defend something, defend freedom, defend our rights. Now we paint that we defend our interests. Although it seems like our national interests are to rule the world. That's what it is. And if anybody gets in the way of ruling our world, or even seeks to say that they challenge our authority, we will, you know, we crush them by whatever means we need to. You know, Iran sees what happened to Iraq and they quiet a bit. We don't hear about them very much. Every now and then you may bring them up, or they might get brought up for the simple reason that you have to have some hated, terrible, evil, wicked enemy to keep these things going. You know, the reason why we don't pull out of Iraq and let them take care of their own affairs, which they will, these things will stabilize, it's because we don't want Iran taking them over. We don't want Iran to get any emboldenedness, I suppose. Which could happen. But we are much more interested in controlling the situation. That's what's going on. We don't want to even begin to pull out of Iraq, particularly, until we feel like things will definitely go exactly the way we want them to. The whole point, one of the whole horrible parts about the war, now this is getting into the whole part of politics, and I need to pull back from that, because that's all I've been talking about for a while here. So I need to stop, and let's get back to the whole topic of retribution. Almost everything that happens, it's only been something of a big kind of convoluted example of the fact that we live for retribution. We feel like that's the only response if something goes wrong, is retribution. You know, in the housing market, if people make bad decisions, if people get schnookered, you know, people who bought houses and they paid too much for them, or they got into really questionable loans, I'm sorry, all along the way, people would say, yes, these are questionable loans. Smart people. Of course, everybody believed what the banks were saying. The banks profit off of loans. You shouldn't listen to them. They don't have important things to say because they're slanted. they're slanted toward, yeah, you should get this loan. It's a great idea. Especially if it makes us a lot of money. And it will. You know, so that's, but then after that's done, we all look for villains to get retribution from. Those evil banks who did not look after our interest. We go, it's your job to look after your interest. It's your job to do that. And then they keep running to government to get retribution. Not just retribution now, but salvation. How many people turn to the government to save them from their own short-sightedness? I don't know about you, but my Heavenly Father, my God, is not particularly a God that smiles happily on people who are naive and stupid. Now, that's not to say that you should be, you know, that you have to be really cagey and really smart and stuff like that. We are supposed to help each other to avoid evil, bad things. My wife just got a letter with a check in, a check for like almost $5,000. And it was a scam. But a very convincing looking scam on its face. The letter that came with the check was just garbage. It was interesting. It was all purported to be some weird lottery that you never became a part of. It was simply a lottery of people who, you know, records of Walmart and things like that. I can only imagine that they were stolen records. And, you know, there was going to be $3,600 worth of government fees and service charges. This advanced money was supposed to help cover those charges. I can just imagine that they're getting enough information to authorize this check, and in getting that information to authorize the check, they would be taking the $3,600 out of your account. And when that check bounced, when the check wasn't honored, you would just be out $3,600 for all these fees. And it's only slightly illegal. It's only slightly fraudulent. As long as these guys, you know. Anyway. And that when this happened, somebody would seek retribution. You know, I was stupid, I got snookered, I need to, you know, and I shouldn't suffer for it, somebody else should suffer for it. Now, that doesn't say that you shouldn't punish wrongdoers, but our attitude toward it is usually, I want retribution, not just compensation. I want retribution, you know. I expect to sue this guy and make several million dollars for pain and anguish and despair. And most of the pain, anguish, and despair is caused by stupidity. You know, you wouldn't have gone through this if you would have been an intelligent person. If you would have been looking at it and going, hey, wait a minute. This guy's wanting to give me something, but they're wanting something back in return. And doesn't sound like much of a lottery to me. Anyway, so we have become a retribution people. Everything bad that happens needs to be crushed, and you know, people need to pay, even when it's accidental. You know, it's really easy to seek retribution against evil, but we have painted the brush of evil so large. People who simply make mistakes, missteps, things like that are punished as if it was always in their plan to lie, steal, and cheat others out of something. You know, and so just normal people who make mistakes are as evil and as guilty as those who lie in wait to deceive, things like that. And in our incredible need to seek retribution, all this terrible stuff happens. And, you know, and it's just become that way. It's almost like we take advantage of circumstances for our profit, and nobody questions the fact that you're allowed to get retribution. Like, you know, 9/11. I think our response to 9/11 has been a gross form. It goes beyond retaliation. Osama bin Laden is not chased. We are not looking for him. We could care less. We are looking for more dragons to slay, and it actually must suit the purposes of those in power here in the United States to keep him alive. It's very important that villain remain, because if we caught Osama bin Laden, the war on terrorism would fold immediately. And nobody in power wants that really to happen. They may dicker about where we should be applying ourselves, you know, if we should be more in Afghanistan and trying to do something for that country, or if it should be more to an Iraq thing. And that's what it comes down to. It's, you know, we're actually seeking retribution for those who wronged us years ago. The reason why Saddam Hussein is dead isn't because he was a member of Al-Qaeda. I even question the fact that he was even helpful, or that there was much to do between them. If there was anything to do between them, it was probably not very much. We were getting retribution on Saddam Hussein because he turned on us. He was once our stooge, and then he decided that he didn't want to be our stooge anymore. And how dare he do that after all we had done? What little opposition that we got from the Iraqi army when we came marching in with superior force and just decimated what was left of them. How many of the munitions in their hands were actually gifts that we had given them when they were our client state, when they were our lapdog, and that we were getting their government back for not staying in our laps when they started yapping and started nipping at us and wanting a little bit of their own autonomy. Not to say that they used it in a beautiful way. I'm not trying to justify what they did. I'm just saying it just seems sensible. And we lashed back very vindictively. That's what this whole thing has been about, is about teaching a lesson to other client states that you don't go screwing with the ultimate authority of your overlords. And the overlords, you know, are pale-skinned Western people. And over the years, looking more and more American. I don't know who the overlords are. And I guess, you know, it really doesn't matter ultimately. You know? I don't know. But that's what we've become. Retribution. And let me tell you what I think we should do. Now that I've talked about all those things, And I know it's convoluted and it went everywhere. I don't have notes. I'm sitting in my car recording as usual. Here's what we should do. It's very simple. If you're a Christian, and when people say we're a Christian nation, I also cringe. Because if we indeed are a Christian nation, we certainly are not steered by Christian values or by Christian concepts. At least those that were spoken of in the Bible. Now, these may be the things that we now doctrine and we have decided that are good Christian things, but the Bible does not support them. In the Bible it says, the God says, the Lord says, vengeance is mine. And it's always in the context of, you should not seek vengeance. I will seek vengeance for you in time, in His time. I think, and see, and this is another one of those things where I'm kind of attacking Christians, and I don't want to attack Christians. What I do want to do is attack attitudes that many Christians have taken, and that you can easily walk away from and say, I'm not going to do that anymore. When we seek vengeance on our own, we indicate our lack of faith in God. Now that sounds like a nasty statement, but it's true. The only reason why we should seek vengeance, especially when God says vengeance is His, you shouldn't be doing it. Every time we do vengeance, I don't think God smiles. I don't think God puts His blessing on it. When people say God bless America, if we're a vengeful society, I think that's somewhat disingenuous. I don't know if God can bless us. And us saying it doesn't make it so. We need to be much more careful, and we need to say, well, what does God really want us to do? Instead of painting our God in red, white, and blue colors and proclaiming Him ours as if He's on our side, and it's like, no, one has to do what God wants for Him to be on your side. I'm not saying He's not. He makes that judgment. I don't. I'm just saying, be careful. Because when He says, vengeance is mine, that means you shouldn't be exercising vengeance. That's not your place. And that's what we've been doing for years as a nation, typically with public support behind it. One can say, oh, it's our leaders. You know, our leaders did all of that. It's all their fault that stuff happened. You're going, no, no, ho, whoa, whoa, whoa. No. You, the majority of Americans, publicly supported exactly what we've done. The majority of them. Now, that has flipped, you know, in the intervening 7 years as we grow weary of the quote-unquote war. A war that will never end. Because if we're trying to hunt out every single source of evil, every single evil person that would do us harm, you never will. Because in the act of doing that, in the act of the atrocities that we have to perform to get this done, we're going to create more evil people. We're going to create more enemies. Therefore, there will always be plenty of enemies. It's the perfect dodge. If somebody wanted there to be an everlasting war, this is the way to do it. This is the way to do it. And we walked into it cheering, yay, go, God bless America, God bless America. And it's like, I don't know. That's a gutsy statement. I wouldn't do it. We indicate our lack of faith in God's ability to get vengeance when we take it upon ourselves to do it. I can't wait for God. God's taking too long. If God, you know, if God was a just God, if God was a good God, if there even was a God, He would have gotten vengeance long before now. So I'm not waiting for Him. we're going to go in and we're going to take vengeance ourselves. And as we do this, we cause the problems that we face now. And as we continue to react the way we do, they will escalate. There will not be more freedom. We already see that there's less freedom now. But there will also not be more security. We have the illusion of security. In a police state, it's very easy to say you're secure. And it looks that way. You know, people are afraid. There's not many people on the streets for the sole reason that you'll be stopped and questioned. Why are you here? What are you doing? Let me see your papers. Why are you here? Business or pleasure? Where are you going? I'm going to call those people and make sure you're supposed to go there. This happens all the time. When people aren't doing what the overlords say they should be doing. If you're out late, and decent people shouldn't be out late, that takes away your freedom. If you need to be out late for some personal reason to take care of something, and you are waylaid upon your way by authorities who say, I'm sorry, the only people who are out now are criminals and thugs, therefore, you are a criminal or thug, and I'm going to treat you as such, and I'm going to beat you up a bit, and then I'm going to throw you into jail, just as a warning to others that nice people aren't supposed to be out now. You know, I'll even do it without charging you. No, I'll come up with some kind of charge. You know, your seatbelt was unfastened. You didn't water your lawn enough. You were resisting police officers. We wanted to throw you in jail, and you said you didn't want to go to jail. That's resisting us. That's a charge. Now we definitely can throw you into jail with a charge. You know, it's like, whoa, man, how did we get there? It happens every day. It happens every day here in the greatest nation on God's green earth. I begin to wonder how great we are. We certainly have turned from our God, in that we have decided that we're not going to wait for Him. We aren't going to wait for real justice. We will meet it out on our own. And as we do that, we, being short-sighted and somewhat stupid people, cause even more problems. Justice never gets done, even if that was the original intent. And everything that we enjoyed about life, it's gone. All because we didn't have faith in God. Even those who say they do, watch what they do, look at their actions, and does it really have faith in God? I'm not saying that to indict you particularly. I'm saying that so you can look at your life in any number of ways and say, am I being vindictive? Am I trying to get somebody back for something they've done to me? And if I am, is that what God wants me to do? Do I sound like I'm preaching? Yeah, sure, because I am. Is that what God wants you to do? Are you exercising faith in God? If you're being vengeful, if you're seeking revenge, if you're being vindictive, as if to vindicate yourself or someone else, you are essentially showing a lack of faith that God will ultimately do this. You basically tell God, I don't trust you. And you can't expect nice things from your Heavenly Father, Jesus Christ, Allah, Buddha. You can't expect any of those things if your basic attitude toward Him is, I don't trust you. I'll take matters into my own hands because you're inactive. You don't do it on my timetable. And there it is. You know, if you can come up with some way to justify the fact that one can be vindictive, you're welcome to give it a shot. I very much doubt that God is going to smile on it, particularly. And when the moment comes when he starts destroying evil, the whole point is, which side are you going to be on? And when it comes down to it, there's not going to be just one side, there's probably going to be five, and you're going to be on some side that's just as evil as any other side. The United States will not be, I think, particularly on the good side. Especially if you follow the path of least resistance. God bless America! Be careful. Be careful. That is probably a slanted statement. I'm not sure that God blesses America. God will only bless America if America is doing the right thing. And if we're not, we need to repent. We need to stop. That's not just for nations, that's for people too. My advice is don't be vindictive. Remember what Christ said, you know, when somebody strikes you on one cheek, offer them the other one. That's not the sound of a vindictive person. That's the sound of somebody giving you advice that says, let God take care of the punishment. You don't have to meet it out yourself. If someone compels you to walk a mile, walk with them too, twain. This does not sound like a person who is telling you, you know, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. That was the old law. That's not the law anymore. That's the vindictive law. And even then, God was very, you know, God didn't give you carte blanche about that. He only blessed the Israelites in their armies when they turned to him and when they were righteous. You notice that when they weren't righteous, when they had forgotten their God, all of a sudden, it didn't matter if God had said an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. They weren't winning. They were being enslaved. They were being carried off. Bad things were happening. I guess that's basically it. I want everybody to be good. If you are a Christian, be a good Christian. Don't be just one that spouts things, quotes scripture, and then turns around and doesn't behave that way. If America is a Christian nation, we're a nation of very very sad, sorry Christians. And if we expect God's blessing, I don't think we deserve it. As a nation, I think we need to be very, very careful. And we should be much more worried about what God thinks about us than trying to paint ourselves as being all noble because we plant God's name in front of one of our favorite slogans. God bless America. Be careful. Always. Think about these things. I'm not saying that I've probably got the answer, but I have been thinking about it. And it does. It makes me call into question a lot of things that we do. And not just as a nation in relation to other nations, but amongst each other. How we treat each other. We shouldn't seek to get back at our neighbor because of some wrong he may have done to us, whether we perceive it as wrong or whether it really was. How we react to that? Do we try to make their lives miserable? Do we punish them? Do we seek retribution? If we do, we're wrong. If you're hoping to follow Christ, to hoping to be a follower of the Christian God. You don't do that. Makes it very personal. You know, there is no great leader like, say, well, no, let's not say great. There is no leader like Hitler that you can point to and say, I was just following orders. It's all his fault. In your personal life, where you can't point the finger and blame the actions of somebody else, because it's you doing it. If you seek, you know, to hurt your neighbor in retaliation for something, you know, that's you. You're doing that. Stop. You need to repent. I know it's a crazy thing. I think it's somewhat of an antiquated thing, perhaps. That's sad. Don't let it be. Change. Change into a different kind of person that doesn't do that. If somebody's walking all over you, at some point, they're going to get tired. At some point, something will come. Now, you don't hide the fact that things happen. That's not turning the other cheek. That's just saying, I'm not going to retaliate against you. But I will try to bring you to justice. Justice can do what it wishes with you. God is justice. Point out to God, God, they did this to me. And then let it drop. And if God doesn't immediately get on to it, don't decide to take the law into your own hands. In 9/11, probably our best response should have been, and I thought this at the time, and when we went out and started doing all these other things, I kept saying to myself, why? Why bother? Why did we take over two countries? Because we didn't accomplish what we were hoping to do. I thought the huge bounty on Osama bin Laden's head was excellent. I thought surgical, you know, assassin-type strike on Al-Qaeda would have been a much more appropriate response, because it seeks to do one thing. It seeks justice. And that's all. That's all it does. We get him. We extradite him if we have to. And at that point, that was no problem. Everybody was in support of people getting Saddam Hussein. I mean, not Saddam Hussein. Osama bin Laden. We had no countries that were saying no, no, no. Even the Taliban. I seem to recall was not going to give up its position as leaders in Afghanistan to prop up one man. They would have given him up. Just because the international, just so that they could stay rulers of Afghanistan. Of course, we decided to make a political statement, and we wanted to crush the Taliban because, you know, if you're state supporters of terrorism, and you're going, well, you know, they didn't spend all their time trying to root them out. The new government, that is basically the United States government in Afghanistan, just has nice Afghani faces there. It hasn't given up Osama bin Laden either. Of course, the whole point is they can't find him. Of course, that was what the Taliban said, too. We can't find him. But that wasn't good enough. Anyway, that's not here nor there. How we could have handled those kinds of situations, those are some possibilities. I'm sure there are more. They didn't have to get vindictive toward all kinds of people that may have only been somewhat, or not even very much at all, a part of it. You know, the whole nature of Al-Qaeda in the first place is that the left arm doesn't, you know, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing, because then the left hand can rat on the right hand. You don't let them know that. The cells are kept very separate. They have only specific things they're supposed to be doing according to some master plan that they don't know. That they don't know. It's very possible that Al-Qaeda and the U.S. government were in cahoots about 9/11. When we see the aftermath of it, it causes one to wonder and say, what's going on? The 9/11 Commission tried to go into the fact that these buildings didn't fall according to the laws of how things work. They fell as if they were a demolition. A demolition is much different than a plane flying into the upper half of a building. Much different thing. The buildings didn't fall from the impact. And you can see it in every single thing. World Trade Center 7 building was interesting. Now, you know, people say, oh, no, now he's getting into Jay's one of these conspiracy theorists. And you go, no, no, but I can see it. If you look at the stuff, and I have, and I don't purport to be an expert, but now I can say to myself, I'm sorry, I don't trust the U.S. government's statements on this. I don't trust the U.S. government's intentions. In everything they've done the last 7 years, I don't see a resolve to bring the perpetrators of 9/11 to justice. It hasn't happened. We rule Afghanistan. For a while, we've been ruling, or trying to rule, Pakistan, and doing a pretty good job. They pretty much do what we want them to do. Those are the two countries where, you know, it's that border region between those two countries where they are. Why aren't we sending the 180,000 troops we have in Iraq, just make a big ring around the area, march them in, and nothing can be lost. They're trapped inside the ring. You know how big a ring 180,000 people can form? And that you can just bring them together? Now, that sounds really simplistic. And it's true, it is really simplistic. But if we had that many forces in there, the chances of Osama bin Laden being caught would be excellent. And then we could bring him to justice. And then this whole fiasco of a war on terror could just be brought to a conclusion and say, we have done what we set out to do. We have brought the people who claim to have done 9/11 to justice. But honestly, I don't think that's part of the plan. We want the quote-unquote war on terrorism to continue. This is what happens when things become a question of retribution. It feeds on itself. You can start hating a lot of people, and you can start justifying a lot of, you know, picking out at people. I'm going to sue this person. I'm going to take this person, you know, I'm going to accuse this person of having done this to me. Trump up a few charges. You know, because I have to vindicate myself because of something that they did. And you go, see, it's a slippery slope that you go on. We are sliding down that slope even today. When it comes to relations between nations, things like that. What difference does it make to me how things go in Iran? If Iranians like the government they have, or even if they don't, they have the power to rise up and change it. They did it before. They have a much better track record at it than we do. In 1978, 79, 1980, they totally changed their government. They threw out a person they didn't want, the Shah. and they put in somebody else. Now, I don't know if that's the person they actually ended up wanting, but that's who they got. If they didn't like that person, hey, man, do it again. Americans have a problem doing that because we've got such a, you know, we haven't had a real revolution in 200 years. We've, you know, we've got kind of flabby around the middle. All of our buddies are getting paid off by somebody. So we're not willing to go and take those kinds of risks. Do those kinds of things. No. What's the point? We're rich and flabby. And, you know, does that make people want to revolt? They said, the tired, hungry... No, not tired. The hungry and oppressed, they start revolutions. That's how those things get started. That's why we can't pull that off ourselves, even if we wanted to. And most of us don't. We kind of like how things are. And we like thinking of ourselves as the greatest nation on God's green earth. That's why Michael Medved says it. Because immediately everyone wants to agree with him. Yes, 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 that's right. That's right. We're the best. We are the best. Better than the rest. Sorry. I shouldn't be doing that because that's a copyright song. And I should be paying some kind of royalty to somebody for that. Aaron Edson. Let me at least say that Aaron Edson wrote that song. And he deserves remuneration. Anyway, so... I know I got back up to the whole nation thing, nation level, because that's so visceral right now. But you can also bring it right back down and say, you know what, when we support and get behind and cheer the actions of our government and of our nation against another nation, that ends up justifying us treating each other that way. You're just a terrorist. I think it's interesting, you know, we bat around these horrible words so flippantly now. It's applied to all kinds of things. Anybody that's working against what they conceive to be an evil, and somebody else doesn't like it, you know, terrorist, you're a terrorist. And then everything kind of chills out because who wants to go to Guantanamo Bay? Who wants to live there without charge as if you're some enemy combatant without any kind of rights whatsoever now that we have decided that waterboarding isn't torture. It's a good, presentable way to get something we want. How soon before we start doing it to each other? How soon before that starts happening? And our vindictive, vengeful trend that we're taking. How long will it be when your local police officer, in an effort to get some kind of a confession out of you, that you have done something that you may or may not have done, that he will use waterboarding because this has been declared as being acceptable. It's not torture. It is a very effective way of getting information out of people. When will it be turned on us? When will your neighbor be using it on you? And when you will take, say for instance, their car, and running into their house, kind of like 9/11, in vindictiveness. That's what brought us to this point, is the need to vindicate everything. Not that what's happening isn't wrong, not that our interventions in other countries isn't wrong. We shouldn't be doing that. That wasn't even one of the principles upon which our nation was based. In fact, the biggest thing about it was that we didn't want other people interfering with our our affairs, and yet we seem so willing to do it to everybody else. And that's so true of personal relations too. We are so hypocritical sometimes in that we don't want other people affecting us, but we are so adamant about affecting them. Many of the laws on a municipal level are laws put into place specifically for one person who has a little bit of clout to punish another person for what they've done. And sometimes you can see it. It has to be applied in a general way. You know, you can't just say, you know, and this person may no longer do this. It has to be nobody may no longer do this. It takes away our freedom, takes away our liberty, but it also just indicates how vindictive we tend to be. When more and more laws are written that way, I'm going to punish my neighbor by punishing everybody. And I don't care about this because this doesn't affect me. You know. All big SUVs have to pay a big tax. I don't care because I don't have that SUV. But my neighbor does, and I hate their big thing. I hate it when they turn it on at 6 in the morning and it goes, blah, 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 wakes up the whole countryside. So you write a law because you can come up with trumped up reasons why you don't think people should have SUVs. Of course, you can't take them away from them because they're private property, but you can tax them for it. You know, there should be a special gas tax for SUVs because they use up so much gasoline. You go, well, if they use up more gasoline than you do, they by nature will pay more taxes because they use up more fuel. Oh, no, but we need to punish them even more because we need to get rid of them because I hate my neighbor. I hate his SUV. I want to get back at him. Vindication and vengeance. Vengeance is the Lord's. Let him handle it. Trust that he will. Dang it. Oh, God, I didn't run him over. Two squirrels playing around the street. They were getting out of my way. And then they swooped over to get under the car. But when I look back, there's no smushed little squirrels. I hope they didn't try to pitch a ride. I'm probably giving squirrels a ride. Anyway, boy, have I taken this long enough. This is Jay Nemro. A long one, hopefully not too convoluted. I don't think I'll be speaking on these subjects very often. Or maybe I will, who knows. Whatever subject you want to have spoken on in your context, let me know what you want that to be. I was just thinking about those kinds of things this morning, about how I needed to handle this. I need to come up with some kind of a rate because I don't live anywhere near an airport. The two airports that are closest to me, one of them is about 120 miles away, and the other one's 160. And that's quite a ways. You know, I live out in the boonies, honestly, really, sincerely boonies. I don't mean East Coast. You know, I live three miles from town with several hundred people that have farms within a mile of me. No, I'm talking real boonie action here. Nobody, relatively nobody, lives out here. Anyway, and then how I'm going to take care of that. You know, you want to give people assurances that that you're actually coming. And it becomes an object of trust. You know, you really have to say, well, is it going to trust me? You know, I can't do things completely so that I feel completely safe, because that exposes the person wanting me to come. And that kind of doesn't do well for business. If they're saying, guy, this guy could take all this money and never show up and never give this money back. You know, and I, And I want you to feel confident that I'm coming. You know, honestly. So I definitely want the plane tickets for wherever you're sending me to. If you are going to send me to someplace where you want me to drive instead, and I, you know, honestly, I kind of prefer driving. You know, you're going to have to take care of, you know, you'll have to send that money in advance, you know, as part of that contract. That way you're not out completely, you know. I won't make people pay for my driving from my town to the airport up front. That'll just be part of the basic fee that happens, that we do under contract. You'll need to pay a little bit up front to make it worth my while. I usually consider that to be either the plane ticket or paying for my travel and lodging to get there. You know, I live in New Mexico. If you want me to go to Washington State in a car, I don't know if I'm very willing to do that. I think I'm probably willing to drive. I'm probably willing to drive 200 miles, which isn't very much. So I'd have to, by and large, say, get me a plane ticket, because I'm already having to drive between 120 and 160 miles, depending on which way you want to go, to justify, you know, to even get to an airport. So yes, you're definitely going to pay for the plane ticket, either from Amarillo, Texas, or from Albuquerque, New Mexico, to get me somewhere. I'd have to say that Albuquerque probably would be the cheapest ticket, and that's fine. I have business to do in Albuquerque, so it's not a big problem for me to have to get there to go traveling to places. But yeah, that's kind of the way I've put that. If you'd like me to come speak to you, the phone number to contact me is 1, the country code is 1, the area code is 575, the city code is 461, and my phone number is 2716. So there it is, 1-575-461-2716. And yeah, and just so you guys will know ahead of time, we can agree upon the ultimate price of having me speak or do a breakout session or whatever you want me to do at whatever gathering you have. And I'll be glad to do it. And we can agree upon a piece of money. The upfront money will be the plane ticket. Give me a plane ticket it needs to be a round trip ticket. And you arrange the dates when that happens, and I'll comply with it. I'll make that happen. Of course, we have to agree on dates. I don't like to travel on Sunday, so I will tend to say no to Sunday travel. Wherever I am, I want to go to church. Sunday is a holy day for me, and so I don't travel particularly that time. I will find some place to go to church locally, wherever I am, if I can. Those are really the only big stipulations I have. Of course, need some time ahead of time. Scheduling, for scheduling. Can't just do it in 5 minutes. So I would have to tentatively put you down on the schedule, and then we can say, okay, you know, flying in, flying out these days, however you want to do it. Give me that range of days that we can work with, and then we'll solidify it later. But my security is that plane ticket that you say, okay, this is how we're going to get you to the venue. And of course, once I'm there, you know, you guys take care of me. You know, I have a place to stay, I have food to eat, transportation's taken care of. If it's not, that just gets added to the bill at the end that you're expected to pay. If you want to save money, do it yourself. You know, I want private accommodations, please. I don't want to be sleeping with your kids, particularly. I'm sorry. I really am a private person, and I treasure my private time when I, you know, because I'll often be putting the last minute touches on the things I'm going to be doing, the things I'll be saying at the very end, because, you know, inspiration comes. Anyway, so, I'm sorry, this thing is even getting even longer because I just keep not stopping it. I apologize. But just to kind of to let you know, if we're going to do this, this is kind of how I envision it. That's the security of that plane ticket. I know you've paid out money to make that happen. And that's also the guarantee that I'm going to be there. Is that I have that ticket in my hands. And then I'll do it. And you don't have to pay for anything beyond that plane ticket until after the job is done. That's kind of how it is, you know. People always say, well, you know, we'll give you 10%, we'll give you the other 90 when the job is done, you know. And it's just to help us build mutual trust, you know. I'm not going to get paid the full amount unless you do that. I can't really change in those plane tickets. The plane tickets are worthless to me. It would only be good for me if I was coming to where you were. So we can all feel a little bit more comfortable about the fact that it's really going to happen. That I'm really going to come. That it's really going to be good. If I can't come, I'll return your plane tickets to you. I hope that they're refundable. I'll try really hard to go. I do have a family. I have a wife. And I have extended family nearby that can take care of you know, problems that crop up with my children. You know, things that would normally make it so somebody couldn't come. I don't have a lot of those issues. I'm not single. I'm not a single parent or something like that that would preclude me from doing these things. I travel all the time, and there's very few times when I have to say I can't travel. It's only when I am personally ill and can't do it. But I tend to anyway. I tend to ignore most of my illnesses and just let them go on. And I'm not going to put all these things up in one spot. Anyway, this is Jay Nemro. Contact me 1-575-461-2716 if you want me to come speak to your group or if you're willing to pay me for something. Feel free. I'm not going to stop you. This has been episode 618, the biggest ramble I think I've ever done. On so many subjects, but still around the topic. Guy, it's kind of weird. Let me make sure I got my pointer here. It always tends to wander. Where is my pointer? There. Oh, I saw it. Wow, this thing is in high-speed mode. Going up in the corner.